now. We're holding on page 12 in Ervin Oistes. So we quoted yesterday, we learned yesterday a drasha that Rav Chisda said in the name of Mori Bar Mar about the size of Torah Shabbat Peh. So now another drasha from him, which eventually we're also going to relate back to things involving Torah Shabbat Peh. And it might be, I mean, I was mentioning yesterday, it's a little hard to see what the connection is between this and the previous Gemara, but maybe it is. I mean, most, if not all of what's in Masechta Eruvin is things that are bonim. In fact, Maharsha mentioned something along those lines at the end of Masechta. So therefore, maybe here, more than any other place, the Gemara wants to stress the importance of Torah Shabbat Peh and of Gzeiras and Takanas that are bonim. Anyway, for Omer of Chista, Dorash Mori Bar Mar. My dichtiv was meaning what does it mean in a pasuk in Yirmiyah? Here, Ani Hashem, Yirmiyah says Hashem showed me in a nevuah. V'hine shnei dudoy teinim mu'odim l'fnei heichal Hashem v'gemer. There are two baskets of figs sitting in front of mu'odim. Rashi explains means mu'chonim, prepared in front of the heichal, in front of the Beis Mikdash. And he goes on to explain, and he continues and describes haduda echad teinim tovus ma'od k'teini habakoros. He says one basket is full of really good figs, like the early ripening figs, which we find in various psukim. Those are always the extra good ones. So therefore, the Gemara interjects, Elu HaTzadikim Gemurim. So that basket refers to the Tzadikim Gemurim among the Jewish people. In context to the pasuk, actually it does. Maharsha points out, if you look at the whole Nevuah over there, it's a shortish perek, but Yirmiyah sees over there, he sees this one basket full of good figs, and the other one full of spoiled figs. And Hashem tells him the first one represents the Jews who went into Golos Yechonia. They include the Chorash V'Hamaskil, the great outstanding Talmid HaChachamim. And they're the ones who eventually their descendants are going to return to Eretz Yisrael and build the second Beis Mikdash, as opposed to the other basket, Hashem goes on to tell him, refers to the Jews who remain behind in Eretz Yisrael, most of whom are Rishoyim, and they're going to end up getting destroyed at the time of the Churban. So even in the simple sense of the pasuk, the two baskets represent the Tzadikim versus the Rishoyim. But what the Gemara is adding over here is that we're talking about Tzadikim Gmurim versus Rishoyim Gmurim. Where from the Pasuk, all you would have is the Jews who were taken into Golus and Babel versus the ones who remained behind in Eretz Yisrael. Elsewhere, by the way, the Gemara points out in Sanhedrin that you had King Yehoyakim, and then he died when he was captured by the Babylonians before they even brought him to Babel. He died, and his son Yechoniah became the next king for 3 months, and then Nebuchadnezzar besieged the city, and Yehoyakim went out and surrendered, and with him went into Golus the Chorash V'Hamasker. So the Gemara summarizes it, and Yehoyakim himself was a tremendous Rosha, but his subjects were basically Tzadikim. And you see it actually in various psukim in Sefer Yirmiyah, whereas by the time Tzidkiyahu became king, after Yechoniah, it was the other way around. Tzadikim had been taken off to Babel. Tzidkiyahu himself personally was a Tzadik, as we learned about him at the end of Shabbos, but his subjects were mostly Rishoyim. So therefore, the two baskets represent those two groups. So again, the first basket represents Elu HaTzadikim HaGmurim, the perfect Tzadikim. V'adud Echad Teinim Rois, then Yirmiyah continues describing the second basket is full of bad figs. So the Gemara explains, Elu Rishoyim Gmurim, so that basket refers to Rishoyim Gmurim. Now, Yirmiyah goes on to say in the psukim over there how they're going to be destroyed at the time of the Churban. So, b'shema toimar, so you're going to think, therefore, ovad sivra muvoto sikuyam. Their hope is gone and their future is bottle. Those Jews who are represented by the Teinim Arois, that's it. They're goners and we're never going to hear from them again. Nope, Talmud Loimar, we have a different pasuk in Shir HaShirim that says, HaDudoyim Nosnu Reach. Now, the simple meaning of Dudoyim is a type of flower, like you have what Reuven brought to Leah and then Rachel asked for them. And in fact, the Gemara is going to bring soon a drosha where Rava understands it exactly in that sense, in the sense of the Dudoyim flowers. The Gemara elsewhere discusses a few possibilities, what they are in different Mephoshim. The Pesukim also discuss the violets or mandrakes or whatever, anyway. But here Rav Chisda is darshaning that Dudoyim is Meloshin Dud, Meloshin those two baskets that we were just talking about. So HaDudoyim Nosnu Reach, so both baskets are giving forth a fragrance, meaning Elu Ve'Elu Asidim Sheyitnu Reach. In the future, both groups, both the Tzadikim Gmurim and even the Rishoyim Gmurim, are going to give a fragrance of, in other words, that even the Rishoyim, they're not always going to remain Rishoyim, may have also a fragrance of Torah. Even Marashah says they're like the Hadas. It has a fragrance, but no tam. That means people who have, so that represents people who have Torah without mitzvahs. Usually, actually, we say it the other way around. Usually, we say the lulav is the ones who have Torah without mitzvahs, and the hadas is the other way around, mitzvahs without Torah. But that's how Maharsha says it over here. Anyway, the point is, so we see that even those Rishoyim Gmurim, they still have a fragrance and they still have a future as part of the Jewish people. Maharsha also mentions another Jerusha in this connection, where when it says by Yitzchak, when Yaakov came to get the brachas, by Yorachas Reach Begodov, so the Gemara Darshan Zaltuki Begodov, Ela Boidov, even the disloyal, treacherous Jews also have a fragrance in Gan Eden with them. And that's what Shlomo is expressing in this pasuk in Shir HaShirim. And therefore we're saying, even though Hashem is saying at the time to Yirmiyah that these people represented by the bad figs in the basket are going to have to undergo terrible Yisurim, but nevertheless they're still going to remain part of the Jewish people and they have a future as part of it as well. So the Gemara continues, Dorash Rava, my dichtiv had Dudoyim nosnu reyach. Let's talk about that pasuk some more. The Dudoyim have given forth their fragrance. So here Rava is understanding that it means Dudoyim, as in the usual sense, as some kind of fragrant flower. So Eva Bachuri Yisrael Shlai Talmud Tam Chet. This refers to the young Jewish men who have never tasted the taste of sin. So therefore, in other words, Maharsha explains when people do Averis, then we have, like we learned in Shabbos, Nirdi Nosan Rechoy, that the fragrance is described as being given away and departing. Here you have the other way around, because they don't have Averis. They're young men in most societies are usually involved in Znus, but Jewish young men are not. They keep themselves for marriage. So therefore, they're giving forth a fragrance of that they don't have that fet. And when the pasuk continues, "Va'al psachenu komud godim," that same pasuk continues in Shir HaShirim, by our entrances are all the delicacies. So the Gemara is darshining megodim meloshin magidos elu bnos Yisrael shemagidos pischeim baaleim. This refers to the Jewish women when they're married, where they tell their openings to their husbands. In other words, that they tell their husband when from their opening, when from their womb, there's come blood and they need to separate because she's nidah or zava. So they tell them. They don't say, well, nobody's going to know about it and I have a taiva for it and who cares. They're careful about these things. So that's described in the pasuk as va'al psachenu komagodim. And the davar loshen achar sha'oigdos pischeim ba'alein. Another way of understanding is megodim is meloshen oigdos, meloshen tying up. They tie up their openings and reserve them for their husbands, that they're not mizane with anybody else. So therefore, Shlomo in this metaphor is praising the young Jewish men and women that they're careful with these kinds of things. And the pasuk continues, Chadoshim gam yishonim dodi tzafanti loch, the new as well as the old, my beloved, which is Hashem, I've hidden them away for you. So that means, Omra Knesset Yisrael, the Pnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, means the Jewish people say to Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Harbe gzeiros gazarti al atzmi, yosim mimasha gazarti alai, I made upon myself many gzeiros, much more than you put on me, because we have all the gzeiros to Rabbanon, v'kiyamtim, and I've kept them. So we have chadoshim, the new ones that are newer, that are later than when the Torah was given, because they were made by the Chachamim, as well as Yishonim, as well as the old original ones. So Maharsha says this directly relates to what we were just talking about. For example, consider how much in Hilchos Nidah, Consider how much of the halachas of Taras and Mishpacha is based on Gzeiros Derabanan and even Chumras of Jewish women. The way that we keep these halachas nowadays is far beyond what it says in the Pesukim. So that's a perfect example of we've made many Gzeiros on ourselves and we keep them and we keep them to the letter. So Maharsha says, okay, why does it mention Hadoshim first? One thing is the Gemara is going to explain soon that Divrei Sofrim are even more important than Divrei Torah. Therefore, it's appropriate that the Chadoshim, the new ones, should be mentioned even before the old ones. There is, by the way, a very interesting thing in this connection. There's the famous Gemara in Bechoris where Rabbi Yeshua has a whole debate in symbolism with the wise men of Athens, Sovei Divrei Atona. And one of the things that goes on over there is they ask him at one point, if a person borrowed money and he doesn't have any, and he doesn't have what to pay back, why would the lender be willing to lend him again? And Rabbi Yeshua answers them with a mashal. He says, imagine, for example, a person goes out to the meadow to cut reeds, and he finds he's cut a lot of them, and now it's too heavy a bundle. What does he do? He keeps on cutting more and adding them to the bundle, and eventually somebody comes along and helps him lift them, and then he's able to take much more than he would have been able to originally. So what's going on over there? What's the mashal and what's the nimshal over there? So there's an explanation that Vilna Gaon has on that whole story, where he explains that many of the things that they're debating about have to do with the Yeshua is standing for the specialty of the Jewish people, that we're the Am HaNivchar, and they're standing for that, Chol HaGoyim Beis Yisrael, or we're greater than you, and all of that. So he explains that particular one, is they're asking him, given that you Jews didn't even keep the mitzvahs d'Araisa, what's the sense of even having of adding mitzvahs d'Rabbanan? It would be like borrowing money and you can't pay it back, and then you're just going, you're going to the lender, to Hashem, to ask him to lend you more. What's the point of it? And he answers them with the mushal of the reeds, that the point is, once you have this larger bundle and somebody else notices you need help with it and he helps you, so therefore, adrabba, having the more reeds helps you be able to carry the original, the same way having more gzeiras d'rabbanan helps us keep the dinim d'araisa, which yes, otherwise, before that, we were being careless with them, but now it helps uphold and strengthen. So the Gemara continues. On the way of Rav Chista, who made Abonim to have become a Sadr Agad to Kamei. Rav Chista had one of the Chachamim who used to arrange a Gadda in front of him. So this Hahumen Abonin was teaching a Gadda. He was teaching Ein Yaakov, let's say. So Rav Chista asked him, Mishmielach Chadoshim Gam Yeshonim Dodi Tzafanti Loch Maihi. So he asked him, have you heard anything? Any explanation of what the Chadoshim Gam Yeshonim of this positive, when it says Dodi Tzafanti Loch, my beloved Hashem, I've saved them, I've preserved them for you. My he, what is that pasuk referring to? So this may have been before Rava's Darasha that we said before, or maybe Rav Chista didn't like that Darasha, so he wants a different one. Amalei, so this Hahumen Abanan answers him, Eilu mitzvahs kalos and mitzvahs hamoris. It refers to the easier mitzvahs and the harder mitzvahs. So we're saying that we keep them both equally, and then we're preserving all of them for Hashem. On the later, Chista says, well, how can you call them new and old? But he Torah pa'amim nitna. Why? Was the Torah given piecemeal? No, the Torah was given all at once on Har Sinai. Now, Iyun Yaakov points out there is, in fact, a machloikas about that in Gittin. There is a machloikas over there in the Gemara whether Torah chasuma nitna, was the Torah given all at once to Moshe Rabbeinu, or was it Torah megillah nitna? Each section of the Torah was given at a different time, and not so much when it was given. You have the different opinions, whether it was all given on Har Sinai, or whether some mitzvahs were given in Oyel Moed or whatever. There the Gemara is talking about more the writing of the Torah. Was it that only at the end of the 40 years Hashem told Moshe to write it all down, and that became the Torah that we have? Or is it that throughout the 40 years in the desert, whenever Hashem taught Moshe a mitzvah, or whenever an episode happened, then Hashem would dictate to Moshe to write it then, and then eventually, at the end of his life, he tells him to assemble that all into the Torah that we have. So here, Rav Chista says, Iyun Yaakov is evidently following the opinion that Torah, Chasuma Nitna, the Torah was given to be written all at once, so you can't really talk about Chadoshim versus Yishonim. With that said, though, Marshall says maybe what it could mean is, what did this Hahumen Abanan, what was he thinking? Doesn't he know that? Is within mitzvahs themselves, you have within each area of mitzvahs, you have kalos and chamuris. For example, in Shabbos, you have chamuris, which are the 39 malachas, and then you have kalos, which is the Isur Tchumen. The Isur Tchumen is Dirabbanan, or even to the extent that's Daraisa, it's not one of the 39 malachas, there's no Isur Skila involved. The most there is, according to that, would be, as we learned previously, an Isur Malkus. Similarly with Arayas, for example, you have things that are Chomer, that are Chayiv Misa, and you have things that are much more lenient, for example, Isur Yichud. So therefore, this Hahumen Abanan may have meant that Shabbos and Arayas themselves were originally given, and then later on, the Tchumen was added on top of Shabbos, and Yichud was added on top of Arayas. So therefore, they can still be called Chadoshim and Yishonim. But still, Rav Chista is saying, the fact is, if they were all given by Hashem to Moshe, we're talking about the part of Yichud that's Daraisa, and the part of Tchumen that, at least according to some opinions, is Daraisa, then how can you call it Chadoshim versus Yishonim? So Ella halolu divrei Torah, halolu divrei Sofrim. So rather, Rav Chista tells him, like Rava said before, that it means divrei Torah versus divrei Sofrim. So now we can talk about new versus old, because the divrei Sofrim are in fact newer, since they were enacted only later. Okay. Dorash Rava, then Rava darshins another thing regarding this, regarding Divrei Sofrim versus Divrei Torah. My Dichtiv was a pasuk at the end of Kehelas. The Yosef Mehema Bnihi Zohar, more than all of this, my son, be careful, previously, throughout the whole Sefer Kehelas, Shlomo is telling people about, you have to listen to Hashem, you have to realize that what Hashem says is your purpose in life, and so forth. So now, even more than that, my son, be careful, Asoy Sfarim, Harbe Ein Kates, of making many books, there would be no end. Which means, B'ni his Zohar B'divrei Sofrim, Yosef B'divrei Torah, means Shlomo is telling his sons, and his son is Talmidim, because Talmidim Kurim Bonim, that you have to be more careful with Divrei Sofrim, more than with Divrei Torah. So in the previous Tzukim, actually, it mentions that, it mentions Divrei Chachamim Kador Voinus, the words of the Chachamim are like gold. A goad is a stick with a metal point that you use to get an ox or whatever animal to go in the right direction. So therefore, he's mentioning the Yosef Mehema more even than what we talked about before about things Lidaraisa. Be careful with those Divrei Chacham and Kadar Avonos. So be careful even more than with Divrei Torah. Shalolo with Divrei Torah. Yeshman es v'loises there, because when it comes to Divrei Torah, not everything in a way is so serious. So there are things that are mitzvah saseh, and there are things that are mitzvah sloy saseh. And mitzvah saseh, after all, don't really have a particular punishment to them. We have in yesterday's Tanya, the Altareva talked about Ha'ur Nedar and all that, but nevertheless, there's no particular punishment for them. Whereas when it comes to Divrei Sofrim, anybody who violates them is Chayav Misa B'dei Shamayim across the board. So Rashi explains, by the way, the whole pasuk before it. The pasuk before it goes, Divrei Chachamim Kador Voinus, Uchmas Meres Nturim Balei Asupers, Nitnu Meroya Echon. And then after that is the pasuk that Gemara is quoting over here, the Yosef Mehem. So it means, Divrei Chachamim Kador Voinus means the words of Torah Shabbat Peh, which were originally given to Moshe, so we're not yet talking about Dinim Zerabbanon. But they were given to Moshe Balpeh, and later on, eventually, there became machlokes about them because people forgot details about them. Nevertheless, nitnu meroya echad, they were all given from the one shepherd, Moshe Rabbeinu. And now, Shlomo is saying, Yosef Mehema, even more than what was given the Sinai, what was given in Torah Shabbat, be even more careful with Torah Shabbat Peh. But, as he's going to go on to say, why weren't they written? Because there would be no end of it. And the point is, Divrei Sofrim often, by the way, doesn't just mean mitzvah sedabon. Often, Divrei Sofrim also means things that the Chachamim learned out with the Yud Gimel Midas Shatur and Adreshes to him. So even though those have the status of things that are Isa, nevertheless, they're called Divrei Sofrim because they were brought to light by the Chachamim. So when it comes to those, Kol Oyra Alein, Chayv Alein, Misa B'dei Shemayim, person is Chayv Misa B'dei Shemayim for that. So Kador Voinus means like goads. So again, a goad is a long wooden stick with a metal tip that you use to goad an animal to get it to go in the right path. So therefore, the Divrei Chachamim are like that. They guide you in the right paths of life. They're firmly fixed in nails. Balei Asupa, so actually explains on the positive, means like nails with big heads. Nitnu Meroya Echa, they were all given by the one shepherd Moshe Rabbeinu. So Divrei Torah was saying some of them had punishment, some not. But Divrei Sofrim, Kolo Overal, Divrei Sofrim, Chayav Misa B'dei Shemayim. Now, Marashah says specifically that doesn't mean all Dirabbanans maybe. It means things Dirabbanan that they made as a gedder, as a fence around the mitzvah loisa say that would otherwise involve Misa. So in other words, Marashah says, look, if you have, for example, a mitzvah eseh, and then the Chachamim put a fence around it, then fine, we're not going to say a person is over on that, he's chayiv misa. But when you have, there's something that would itself, midaraisa, be chayiv misa, and then the Chachamim put a fence around it to prevent you from getting anywhere near that. For example, muktzah, for example, shnias v'arayas, which we're going to talk about soon. For example, as Marashah mentions in the story of Rabbi Akiva that we're going to have soon when he was in jail, Matilas Yadayim, which is ultimately based on the idea that you have to eat truma. You can't eat truma when you're tomei, because that would involve Misa B'dei Shemayim. So those kinds of things are what we're saying, that when a person is over on those, then he's chayav Misa B'dei Shemayim. There's also a point that Rabbeinu Yonah makes in his Sefer Sha'arei Tshuva. He explains what Taka is the logic. Why should Divrei Tzofim be so much more severe than Divrei Torah? And he says the reason is because if a person is over on Divrei Torah, usually it's because, okay, he has a Taiva, he has a Yetzirah. But when he's over on Divrei Tzofim, many times what it'll mean is he doesn't respect the authority of the Chachamim to make Zeilus and Takonis for us. So that's a much more serious thing. Where a person is over on some Daraisa, it's not so much that he's saying Hashem has no rights over me. He's just saying, yeah, I know Hashem said to do this mitzvah, but I have a Yetzirah. But to be over on Divrei Tzofim, he says, is much more serious because it amounts to saying that I don't believe that they have authority over us. Fine, but... Right, but nevertheless, you could say that still, okay, a person has a Yetzirah, you know, they can understand that, kind of, but, yeah. Anyway. So Shema Toim, now you're going to say in Yesh Behen Mamash, if Divrei Tzofim, Torah Shebaal Peh, and Torah Shebaal Peh in the wider sense, and also in the narrower sense, meaning specifically the Gzeiros and the Takonis of the Chachamim, in Yesh Behen Mamash, if they're so important, Mitnei Malo Nichtavu, so why weren't they written like Torah Shebaal Saad? And the answer is, as Shlomo continues in the Pasuk, Omar Kras, Sosis Farim Harbe and Kates. Because the Pasuk says, there would be no end of making books. As we learned yesterday, Torah Shebaal Peh is 3,200 times the size of the world, so it would be impossible to write down the whole Torah Shebaal Peh in books, and therefore it was left to be Baal Peh. Anything outside of Torah Shebaal Saad is Torah Shebaal Peh, pretty much, yeah. But again, within Torah Shebaal Peh itself, you have various groups. You have, so Tosfos mentions a point over here, an interesting point. You have Torah Shebaal Saad, then you have, there's things that are halacha l'moshe m'sinai, which the technical definition of a halacha l'moshe m'sinai is a halacha where there's no remez for it in the pasuk. So for a classic example is Nisuch HaMayim. This is that you have to pour water on them. As Be'ach Sukkos, there's no remez for it in the pot. There is an opinion in the Gemara and Mo'ed Katan that says that there is Mem Yud Mem over there, but the other opinion in the Gemara says that there's no remez for it in the posit. It's strictly Baal Peh. So that's one group. Then you have things that the Chachamim learned out throughout the generations with the Yud Gimel Midas Sha'atur and Yudreshes Behem. And then you have many of those have the status of things Daraisa. A classic example is among the Arayas, it doesn't list among the Arayas that a man is not allowed to marry or have relations with his daughter. We learn that. The Gemara says we learn it from Gzeirah Shavah, but it's still considered Daraisa. It's still one of the 613 mitzvahs. And the Rambam stresses that point. He says in Sefer HaMitzvahs, usually we don't count in the Nachdama, Sefer HaMitzvahs. In the Shoshim, he explains usually we don't count things that are learned with 13 mitzvahs among the 613 mitzvahs. Otherwise, there'd be a lot more than 613. But sometimes Chazal will tell us about a particular mitzvah that it's Migufei Torah or something to that effect. And an example of that is that. So you have that. Then you have the various Gzeiros and Takonis of the Chachamim throughout the generations. Asus Yog LaTorah, like it says in Pirkei Avos. And then you have all the different deeper explanations of Torah, of Remez and Drush and Soid to learn out various things. So all of those, and all of those are various components of Torah Shebaal Peh. So yesterday we talked about the Megillah, that the Megillah that we said first, David describes in Tilim Rechavim Mitzvah Hamoed, Eov, or rather his friend Sofar and Amasi, says a pasuk over there, Aruka Me'erif Midor Rechavim in the Yom, it's longer than the earth and wider than the sea. Yechezkel sees it written on the front and the back. Zechariah sees it folded up in half, and the Gemara made a whole calculation. We learned yesterday that the Torah is 3,200 times the size of Torah Shebaal Peh, is 3,200 times the size of the world. So that's Shlomo saying in this passage, it would be impossible to write it all down. Therefore, to begin with, as important as it is, it wasn't written down.
The whole
Torah Shebaal Peh. Eventually, it had to be written down because people were going to forget it. But, yes. So now we don't even have the tiniest fraction of it, yes. We have a small fraction of it, of course, but there's a lot more that, Tosfos, by the way, mentions an interesting point over here. Tosfos, this is a two-line Tosfos, which is very difficult to understand. Tosfos says, "V'gamba halacha l'moshe m'sinai l'nitnu." They also weren't given as halacha l'moshe m'sinai kadesh lo yishtakhu, so that they're not forgotten. Now, what does Tosfos mean by that? Many mafoshim deal with it. There's a footnote over here referring to the Chavis Yer, and in fact, the various Mephoshim on the sides of the Gemara, Gyori Nashas, and Agos Ma'arav Ransburg, and all of them also refer to the Chavis Yer. He discusses what it means is, now like this, you have the Rambam writes in his Akdama to Pirush Mishnayos and in other places, that one thing about Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim, it's impossible that it should be forgotten. Everything that was taught as Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim, of the narrow kind that we were saying, that have no remez and apostates, none of them were ever forgotten. However, the Chavis Yer says that Tosfos over here may be disagreeing with that. They say Halachas L'Moshe Mitzrayim could be forgotten as well. Therefore, Hashem gets, so in other words, what Tosfos is saying is, the question is, all these various Gzeiros and Takonis of the Chachamim, we're going to talk about soon Erevin and Tilas Yadayim, Shnius La'arayis, Mukta, all these kinds of things, why weren't they to begin with given as Halachas L'Moshe Mitzrayim? Why did Hashem leave it for the Chachamim of later generations to come up with them? And so Tosfos is saying, this is how the Chavis Yer explained, if they were given as Halachas L'Moshe Mitzrayim, they might eventually be forgotten. So therefore, Hashem left it for the Chachamim to do in later generations so that they wouldn't be forgotten. And then there's different other points that some of the Mephoshim in the back of the Gemara deal with various other angles on what Tosfos might mean. One explanation that Rabbi Yaakov Emden explains, and Maharat Chayes explains somewhat similarly, that not that precisely because Torah Shabbat, precisely because Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim has no remez and apostate, therefore, there's a good chance of them being forgotten. Mashenkin, things that we learn out, things that the Chachamim learn out with the Yud Gimel Midrash Chatur and Adreshes Behem, there's much more of a likelihood they'll be remembered, because you'll remember the Pasuk that they're based on. So therefore, that would be why, so we're talking about things that, so according to that, Tosfos is not talking about Gzeiros Takanos Derabanan, rather they're talking about things that the Chachamim darshin with the Yud Gimel Midrash, that instead of them being as Halacha L'Moshe, given as Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim, without any anchor in a Pasuk, instead they were left, Hashem made them anchored in Pesukim, so that there's less of a chance of forgetting them. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in fact, refers in that connection. You have a Gemara, the Gemara in Temura, that says after Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, they forgot hundreds of Halachas L'Moshe Mitzrayim, and many Kavu Chomers, and Zeta Shavas and all, so the Halachas L'Moshe Mitzrayim, they were never able to reconstruct. Whereas the Gemara says over there, the things with the Zeta Shavas and the other things like that, Osniyov and Knaz was able to restore them by using the other parts of Torah that were still there. So therefore we see that Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim is much more fragile in that sense. Another one of the Mephoshim in the back of the Gemara of Elazar Moshe Horowitz also points out, since we just said that there's such a severe punishment for being over on Divrei Sofrim, so Hashem didn't want to make them as to just be part of Halachas L'Moshe Mitzrayim, but rather they should be as Divrei Sofrim, so that will take them much more seriously, as we just said. Or rather, he said that the vote is what Tosfos is saying is Kadesh Lo Yishtachu. If they were to be forgotten, then they would have a person would be punished for them, like he's being over on Divrei Sofrim. So, like this, Hashem left it to actually be in a way that it would be less likely to be forgotten by being done by the Sofrim. Okay. Now let's douse in the end of that same pasuk, that same pasuk that we said the Yosef Mehem Bnei Zara so Sfarim Harbe in Kates. The end of that pasuk is. By the way, before we go further with that, actually, I wanted to mention another interesting thing that Chiddush says in this connection in his Pirush on this Gemara. He says one thing is also the advantage of Torah Shabbat Peh originally not being written down is it forced the Chachamim to memorize huge amounts of material, and that itself, he said, had a tremendous effect on refining their neshamas. That's why he says they were on such a tremendous level. Once the Mishnah and later on the Gemara was written down, that's why we start talking about Yeridus Hadoris, is because once it was written down, you don't have to put in as much effort into memorizing it. Then it means they didn't have that refinement of their neshamas as much as they used to in previous generations. And he says that with this you have a certain key to understanding the difference between periods in Jewish history. So he doesn't explain that in detail, but what he means apparently is the same way as, for example, when the Mishnah was written, then you have the transition from the Tannaim to the Amoraim, who are on a lower level. And once the Gemara was written, then you have the transition from the Amoraim to the Goyim, who are also on a lower level. In the same vein, for example, eventually you have the Sfarim of, eventually you have, for example, that in particular, printing came into existence, and now it becomes much easier to get a hold of Sfarim, and therefore to be able to learn them rather than having to memorize them. So therefore, that created the part of the transition between the Rishonim and the Achronim. I kind of wonder what the Chiddush would say that in that case, nowadays when we have the internet, with everything that has, we don't need to memorize anything, you can look everything up. You can look everything up, the Shas Maisa, what would he say about that? But, yeah. People have mentioned to me, by the way, a vote in that connection. You know, you have the famous expression from the Zohar, Talmud Chacham Ikri Shabbos. The two different people have told me a vote on that. It means if a person knows how to, and knows exactly where something is, even on Shabbos, when you can't use Google and you can't use Safari and you can't use all these online resources, then you know he's a Talmud Chacham. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, the pasuk continues, V'lahag harbi yegias baser. So what does that mean? So the simple meaning is V'lahag harbi means a tremendous effort to learn Torah. Yegias baser is it wears out the body. But the Gemara doubts, Amar a papa bread of Achaba Adam, which made the robber, or the Achaba Ula, Melamed, he's going to doubt in the word lahag as being similar to la'ag, which means to make fun of, to mock. Anybody who mocks the words of the Chachamim is going to end up with Yigiyas Basar, with the wearing out of his flesh, meaning that he's going to be punished with Tsoya Resachas. We know famously from the Gemara in Gittin that Oysa Ish wound up like that, and he was Malig al Dirich Chachamim. So that's the Yichtiv, Lahag Havi, Yigiyas Basar. Omale Rava, but Rava says, how can you douchen it that way? Miksiv la'ag, la'hagsiv. The fact is, the pasuk says la'hag with a hay. Now, it is true, Tosfa says, it is true that a person is malig al divrei chachamim, is nidin b'tzoyer nesachas, but Rava says, how can you learn that from this pasuk? That's not what the pasuk is saying. Ella, what it means is rather, kol ha'loyheg, or ha'hoyga b'hen, means anybody who delves into words of Torah. A person is a lahag maloshin hoyger that he's carefully thinking into and speaking out the words of Torah, toyim behem tam baser, he'll taste the taste of meat in it. So Rashi explains it means that constantly a person learns Torah and he always finds something new and interesting in it, and he always motes behem tam, like when a person eats meat where you always have a good flavor in it. Now, but still, Rava figures that still wouldn't have been still over here. Maybe Rava is saying because lahag and la'ag are almost opposites, really. It's one thing, bonayach, bonayach, fine, a son is also a builder or whatever, but here, lahag, to delve into it and think about it, is almost the opposite of lahag, is almost the opposite of lahag, of la'ag, of mocking it, so therefore Rava doesn't like the Durasha. So Marsha mentions over here the Gemara in Bava Kamma, brings it in Perek Zayin of Tanya, about Dain Lachil Mabisra de Torah, that Rav Nachman says over there to Rava that I hadn't yet eaten beef, and therefore I couldn't come up with a good answer yet to your kasha. So we see, in other words, that there's a connection between learning Torah and eating meat. Another explanation, one of the Mephoshim says also, is you have the Gemara in Pesachim that says, Ama Oretz Osu Lechol Basu. So literally, then, when a person learns Divrei Torah, then he's Toyim Tam Basu. He has the right to taste and eat meat. So the Gemara just says over there, Ama Oretz Osu Lechol Basu, and it douchens it from a Pesach. One idea behind it is, we'll get to it, Bez Hashem, when we get to that part of Pesachim, but one idea that some of the Mephoshim make over there is, the idea is, why tackle, what gives the right, what gives a person the right to shechter an animal and eat it is because he's on a higher level than the animal. So if the Ama Oretz is not bringing himself to that higher level by learning Torah and being Mekayim Mitzvah, then by what right does he have to do that? But there's other explanations as well. When we get to that Gemara in Pesachim a few months from now, Bez Hashem, then we'll talk about it. Memtes. What? Yeah. I mean, again, when we say also lachol basar, it doesn't literally mean he's also as in like he's, you know, it means you know, he has no business, basically. So the Gemara says, so in this connection, it happened when Rabbi Akiva was in jail. We know the famous story in Brachas that he was teaching Torah publicly, and then Papas Ben Yehuda argued with him about it, and eventually the Romans arrested him. Rabbi Yeshua HaGarsi was serving him. HaGarsi actually says two possibilities. Either he came from a place called Geres, whatever, or that his job was, his day job for Parnassah, was grinding up peas to make beans, to make split peas, which are called gris and shalpul in Gemara terminology. Anyway, so he was serving Rabbi Akiva. Dodo Soto Shonim, a sefer on Jewish history, makes an interesting point based on a Gemara in Pesachim. he explains when the Romans first arrested Rav Akiva, they arrested him, but they still, you know, they realize they can't just go and execute him on the spot or something. They'll have a worse revolt on their hands than they already did. So, and he explains over there, based on a Gemara in Pesachim, that Yechoi, the father of Rishim Ben Yechoi, had a certain amount of pull with them, and therefore he was able to get that Rav Akiva is being kept under relatively lenient circumstances, and he has one of his Talmidim able to come and serve. So every day Rabbi Yeshua would bring him a certain amount of water, an exact amount of water, where he'd have enough to wash his hands and also then enough to drink. One time the guard by the jail met up with Rabbi Yeshua. He says, what's this all of a sudden that you have so much water? It's not necessarily like it was any more water than before. Marsha explains this guard is just using this as an excuse to harass Rabbi Yeshua. Shema lachta beis asurin at the tzarech. He says, what do you need all this extra water in order to tunnel out of the jail? What are you going to soften the dirt over there with the water and then make it easier to dig out a tunnel? Shafach chetzion v'niyach chetzion. So he poured out half the water and left Rabbi Yeshua with only half of the water. Now this took time. When eventually Rabbi Yeshua reached Rabbi Akiva's cell, Omaloi says, Yeshua, Iati Yadesh, Zokin Ani, V'chayet Tzurin V'chayecha, don't you realize that I'm old and my life depends on yours? I don't have any other food or water except what you're bringing me. Why did you delay so much coming to me? Sochlai Koloi Sama'ura, so Rabbi Yeshua tells him what happened. Omaloi, so Rabbi Akiva says, okay, well, you know, at least you're here. Ten me mine, little Yodai, give me water to wash my hands. Rabbi Yeshua tells him, it's not even going to be enough for you to drink. Literally, you're dying magian. Is it going to be enough for you to wash your hands and you're going to have nothing to drink? So Rabbi Akiva answers, so how could I do differently? As we learned before, that a person is over on divrei sofrim, and that includes that a person has to wash his hands for bread, then a person is chayav misa b'dei shemayim. Mutav sh'omos misas atzmi, so better that I should die a natural death on my own, rather than being over on what my colleagues, the other chachamim, said. Technically, Tosfos says that, and Tosfos and Marashah say, technically he would have been potter. The end of the previous parak, the Gemara mentions that even soldiers in an army camp, even when they're fighting a mochemes l'shus, are potter from the tilos dying before eating. How much more so Rabbi Akiva in this situation, but he wanted to be machmir on himself. There is an interesting discussion about that, in that you have a famous machlokas rishonim on the question, are you allowed to be moser nefesh for anything other than the big three? The Rambam holds, absolutely not. A person is moser nefesh for any of the other ones. He's mischayev benafsha, and he gets no schayev for it. On the other hand, Tosfos and a number of other rishonim, the Rosh, and a number of other rishonim hold that you could. So, for example, the Tosfos Yadayim is not one of the big three. So, according to the Rambam, on the face of it, Rabbi Akiva has no right to be moser nefesh for it. According to Tosfos, and then everybody else, he would. So, to answer the Rambam, a couple of answers. One of the Mephoshim gives an answer that here it's not a direct thing that he's going to die from it. It would be more of an indirect thing, so even the Rambam would allow it. And another possibility is, Mephoshim and the Rambam explain that even the Rambam will agree that sometimes you have a case where people are careless with a certain mitzvah, so an Odom Gadol, a great person like Rabbi Akiva, is entitled to be Moser Nefesh on that mitzvah in order to strengthen the awareness of it among Jewish people. So that may have been the situation over here, that people were getting careless with the Tzilas Yadayim, and therefore Rabbi Akiva has to reinforce it. Omru, so they said, Loi Tom Kluma, Shevile Maim Venoto Yodim. Rabbi Akiva would not eat anything, he wouldn't taste any of the food that Rabbi Yeshua brought him until they brought him more water, and then he was able to wash his hands. Again, the Pashtus, we can understand, you know, the Romans, like we were saying before, they needed Rabbi Akiva more, for the moment anyway, they needed him alive rather than dead, so they don't have a full scale revolt on their hands. Maybe also, who knows, maybe they were figuring maybe they can get Rabbi Akiva to sign some kind of paper or something saying that people shouldn't be learning Torah and keeping mitzvahs, you know, sort of like what you find that they tried to do with Frida Kareba, or whatever. So whatever the case, you know, if the only choice is that Rabbi Akiva is going to die of hunger over there, then they have no choice but to let him have more water. So when the Chachamim heard what happened, they said, what? Because Rabbi Akiva told them. But you actually do find other examples throughout Shas. It mentions here and there things that happened while Rabbi Akiva was in jail. There were other Talmidim who were able at least to stand outside the jail and be able to hear Divrei Torah from him. So whatever. Here we have Rabbi Shua Garsi himself. The Pashtus was able to tell them the story. Anyway, so they said, look at this. If Rabbi Akiva is so careful with such a mitzvah, even when he's old and weak, we can imagine when he was younger and had more of the ability, Allah has kama v'kama, that he wouldn't have careful with that. In Pashas, we don't mean younger before he started learning Torah. We mean once he started learning Torah at age 40. If he's so careful, even in jail, you can imagine how much more careful Rabbi Akiva must have been with this when he was at home. By the way, there are poskim who say that you could technically wrap up your hands in a cloth or something, or wear gloves or something, and eat bread without Matilas Yadayim, and so on the face of it, Rabbi Akiva could have done that. So again, one answer could be that he didn't want to use that so other people are not Mezalzim or Matilas Yadayim, but it's interesting because Al Tadeb actually, at the end of Hilchos Matilas Yadayim in the Siddur, actually says there's absolutely no heter at all to eat bread by doing that. Other foods, things that you have to wash for, wet vegetables or wet fruits or whatever, yeah, you can get away with that, but not bread, he says. Maybe if you have a person is within 4 mil, there's no water, then maybe you could, but even then he says, Ramach Matova El Bracha. So that fits very well with the story of here. That's what the Alter Rebbe is saying. That as far as bread, there's really no heter, except maybe, if you don't have any water within 4 mil. Yeah.
So the glove doesn't work.
So the glove doesn't work for bread, according to the Alter Rebbe, yeah. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, that's the then. Yoyim Mashiach Ge'ola. When Mashiach comes, Geula will turn into Geula by we put a letter Aleph into Geula. The letter Aleph, there's three meanings in it. And those represent three different types of the Geula Yalakus that will be. There's Aleph, Meloshin Aluf, the leader. So it means that by the Geulah HaSidah, we'll see in a revealed way how Hashem is Aluf Rishal Olam. We'll see the Koyach HaPoyol B'Nifl, the Geulah of the Kus, within and the Erech to the world, unlike now, we only know of the Kus that's beyond the world. And then in the next two pieces, we'll continue with the Rebbe's other two explanations of what the word Aleph means. We went up to Simon Samach Hay in Titzah Shulchan Aruch, but that and Simon Samach Vav talk about Dinim of Ribis and Iska, and frankly, I think that's a little intense to be dealing with in this format over here. There's a lot of details in that that it's very, very easy to go wrong with. The Kitzer, if you have anything involving anything that might even be a possibility of Ribis, ask a Shaila. So I think let's skip that and go to Simon Samach Zayin, which is Halachas and Nedarim and Shavuos. So the first thing is, a person should not regularly make nedarim, because as the Gemara says, a person makes a neder as if he's building a bama at the time, and bama is aser, and then if the person fulfills the neder, then it's like he brings the korban on it, which is chayav, because of shkot echutz. The better thing would be to be matir neder. However, that doesn't apply when it's nidre hekdesh, when it's a neder to give tzedakah or to give to a shul or whatever, then it's a mitzvah to keep the nedarim l'Hashem HaShalem, then you should only be matir neder, only b'shas ha'tzah. But other kinds of nedarim, for example, a neder, let's say not to eat something or not to do such and such or whatever those were saying, a person shouldn't make them to begin with, and if he does, he should be matir neder.